Here. Okay. So, here's a topic that I think is of great importance. Something that all of us hopefully can benefit from. And I'm just curious to know, would anyone be willing to share why you chose to come to this particular topic? As they tell you, whenever you fly, we know you had your choice of airline carrier. We're glad you chose United. So why did you choose this particular topic? Just out of curiosity. How about one, two, three, for now. Yes?
It's my passion, fostering positive relationships, and I feel like that's the core, that's the foundation.
So you want to give a presentation?
Absolutely.
I'm sure you'd be excellent at it. Yeah, one second. Did I start this? Hang on. Very important. No, I did not. Reverend Rifkin.
I believe that as I was a kid, you know, what I remembered and what I want to work with my kids more than content that I teach them, how will I remember? But the relationship, I believe, is what they take away.
Yeah, I didn't realize you were a kid. Okay. It's like you meet people as adults. Were you a kid? Right. Okay, who's number three? Yes.
I know who you are. I want to speak.
Okay, well, that's very kind of you. Did you want to say something as well?
Nothing to add to what they
Nothing to add. Yeah. And what was your answer?
I've always felt like I've been really good at that, and recently I'm in a rut with a couple students.
Interesting.
Older students.
Okay.
And I thought I wanted to hear your...
Okay, I appreciate that. By the way, there's probably very little that we will discuss today that you don't already know. The only question is, how can we be more mindful of it and utilize it on a more consistent basis? Ladies who are coming in, please, there are so many seats in the front. And they do not say reserved for VIPs or anything. You're all VIPs anyway. You're welcome to sit wherever is comfortable for you. Okay, anyone else want to share why you chose to... Yes?
One is, I heard a lot about you growing up, and so I wanted to go for this.
Your name is?
Oh,
I met him this morning.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. The other reason is, I'm a preschool teacher. Our biggest thing is relationships.
Yes, it is.
If we don't have a good relationship with them,
You know what's really interesting? So, you know the name Rick LaVoy?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I had the pleasure of following him around, so to speak, because Yaha, you might be familiar with the organization, they would often use him as the keynote for different regional conferences. So I remember one year I did three of them, and he was the keynote at least at two of them. So I got to learn his spiel, as they say. And one of the things he talks about often is that special education is just good education. So for the special ed teachers in the room, their heads are probably nodding up and down. The skills you guys learn are really helpful for everybody. We don't use them in regular ed as often because they may not be as practical in terms of pacing or other considerations, but usually they help everybody. Right? He uses the example of the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act. So the curb cuts, for example, or the buttons on the machines that you can, on the buildings that you bang with your elbow when your hands are full of groceries, and you're able to, as a result, the door opens for you. It might have been designed for people with disability, but it helps everybody. Right, so when you use good instructional practices, everybody benefits. And when you coming back to nursery and kindergarten, that's often, you know, the book, Everything I Learned in Life, I Learned in Kindergarten. You're familiar with that? There's a lot to learn from the things we do in the formative years. We get away from that. Just out of curiosity, how many of you teach preschool? How many of you teach lower elementary through fifth grade? How many of you teach middle school? How many of you teach high school? Okay, so for the middle school and high school teachers in particular, these are things we may get away from because somehow we think in our mind, and I taught high school for many years, so I'm speaking from experience, actually taught at the academy before this building was the academy, but you know, you don't necessarily think that relationships are so important. It's all about sharing content. It's all about making them smarter. It's all about getting them ready for college or whatever your preparatory mindset was, but relationships, as Reverend Erskine said before, the foundation to all of it. You know, I think it's Maya Angelou, but there are definitely a lot of quotes out there, as we'll see, where people in effect say, I don't remember what you said, but I remember how you made me feel. But you've heard of that one. There are a bunch of other ones as well. We'll reference them. Please come on in. Lots of chairs still here in the front. We saved them for you. So please. Okay. So let's dive into our topic. Oh, by the way, what would you like to learn in particular from today, so I know that we were successful. I hope everybody starts a lesson with an objective. Come on, heads up and down if you do. All right. a real objective, a quantifiable objective, right? Given X, students will be able to Y. You familiar with that, the CABD? Condition, after, behavior, degree. So the condition is the content, or whatever you're giving them. The actor are your students, in this case, the participants. So given a one-hour presentation on relationships, participants, here's your SWOT language, for those of you familiar, students will be able to, right, will be able to blank. So what's the deliverable you want from this presentation? I want to make sure that I deliver on your expectations.
You're going to change your speech?
I'm sorry?
You're going to change your speech
in the moment. Yeah, of course. The PowerPoint too, by the way. Yeah. Anyone?
Stronger relationships.
Yes?
Faster relationships with students who don't seem to want them.
Interesting. Okay. Yes? There's another voice over here. Someone?
Have stronger relationships with students.
Okay. By the way, you want to make sure that whatever goal you set is not a fuzzy. Relationships are fuzzies. Climate is a fuzzy, right? Communication, proof communication is a fuzzy. You know what I mean by a fuzzy? It's not specific and measurable. So if you're going to get something concrete out of today, you have to be able to translate it into something specific and measurable that you are going to do. So yes, relationship remains a fuzzy. You can't turn it into a concrete item, but you can have certain indicators of improved relationship. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Can everybody please write down two things right now, whatever paper you have available, that you would say would be metrics, quantifiable metrics, that you could point to and say, I'm doing this and this, and the result of that hopefully will be an improved relationship. What are two things you could, quote, commit to, or at least think that you want to try, that should produce better relationships with your students? On your own. This is, by the way, what we call an outcome goal as opposed to a process goal. An outcome goal is, I want to lose 20 pounds. I can't control whether I lose 20 pounds or not. But what can I control? What I eat, if I exercise, all these kinds of things. So there's the process, and then there's the outcome. The outcome is a better relationship. I can't guarantee, especially for students who don't want it, going back to our first. But what I can do is be more mindful and take action that predictably will produce the result that I seek. Make sense? Yeah? With me? Okay. And for those of you concerned about, well, it's already February, there's no, better today than ever, right? So, yes, maybe we should have had this conversation in August. We didn't. You only asked me to come now. But let's do the best we can to make the rest of the year. Of course, it'll carry over. Whatever you do now and becomes habituated, it'll carry over into the future. So let's not forget that as well. Anyone want to volunteer? One thing that you wrote down that you think should produce a better relationship with your students. We'll go one, two, anyone else? Three. Okay, yes.
Listening.
Okay, what does that look like?
Being listening rather than interjecting or giving advice, or just being a better listener.
Active listening, that also includes some mirroring, perhaps?
Well, I wrote validating as the second one.
Okay, great. But mirroring would just be you restate what they said in your own words, you confirm that that's what they intended. That alone creates, wow, she actually listened to them. How many people really listen to any of your students? Do you think their parents are really listening to them? I'm only speaking from my own experience. Do my kids feel truly listened to at home? I'm not sure. Hopefully, yes, but you know what I mean? But that there's somebody else, an adult in my life, that actually listens and genuinely cares, that's worth its weight in gold. Number two?
Communicate regularly.
Okay. And can you be more specific?
Ask them how they're doing.
So you like little one-to-ones with them?
Yeah.
Okay. Who was number three? Yes.
Compliment students.
Okay, by the way, whenever you compliment, I would recommend that you add the benefit wherever you can. So if you want to compliment a student for getting ready and sitting in class with their materials out, ready to go, the benefit of that is so we can start class on time. Or the benefit is you're ready to learn because students who come prepared typically do better. So whenever you, and this is great for any administrators in the room too, so instead of saying, that was a great lesson, number one, you want to be specific. What specifically did you see? Don't just say generalities, you're a really well-behaved student, or you're really doing great in my class. That doesn't mean much to most people. But if you say, I really like the way you do X, you drill down on something specific, and you also talk about the benefits of edX, then students will feel validated and also encouraged to continue. They want to do more of it because they want your praise. They want your recognition. I don't care how hardened and disaffected your students might be. This is particularly true on the high school level. That's where usually these kind of kids hang out, right? High school and beyond, because they spent too many years already in the elementary school level learning that they're not so smart in their own mind, that they can't get it done, again, in their own mind. They develop a fixed mindset. They develop a lot of barriers to success because they've tasted failure too many times. And we all know students would much rather be bad than stupid. We know that, right?
Yes.
Students would much rather be bad than stupid. So they'd much rather act out so that you call them out on their misbehavior than to be found out to be lacking in terms of what they know. That's also part of what we have to be mindful of as educators. Sometimes you have to look beyond the bad, so to speak, to get to the actual person.
Which brings me to exactly what you said. What was your original question
of what we can commit to?
Yeah. So my thing was, my line I like to keep is get curious. When children are not performing the way we want them to perform, instead of me going right away to, disciplinary or whatever it is, right away it's getting curious. Where is this behavior coming from? And I think that that's helped me a lot with fostering the relationship I have with my students.
Yeah.
So it just happened this week. One of my students is overly chatty and giggly and chatty, and I'm like, okay. So I said, stay at your class for a second. And before I start, giving her a warning, or all these things that we used to do, I got curious, what's going on? She said something like, I was up all night watching the Super Bowl, I'm so tired. And there was such understanding all of a sudden. So there's understanding. And I said, I get it now.
Nice.
Why don't you put your head down on your desk, or whatever it is.
Yeah, trying to understand is very important.
Get curious, I think.
Sometimes you can pull a student out for 30 seconds outside the classroom, or just have
a
little chat on the side.
Take a break, eat breakfast, whatever it is.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that. We'll get to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, understand that the physiological is the base. So let's talk about that more. So here's our objective for today, because I can't ask you for objectives if I don't provide my own. Okay, so what we're going to focus on is to discuss some core competence of relationship building.
Components,
thank you very much. I only had 2 cups of coffee today. And I did travel last night, so those are my excuses. Okay, actionable strategies, that's really what matters. And by the way, when you encounter a strategy that really resonates with you, please do write it down. I'm going to ask everybody for at least 2 things that you're going to commit to. But I would say let's cap it at 3 maximum. 2 is probably better. 2 things from today that you want to put into practice right away. So it's got to go into practice immediately. If it doesn't happen tomorrow, the likelihood of you using it is almost 0. Okay, does that make sense? Use it or lose it. So you got to implement it right away. Whatever that is for you, I don't care if you came up with on your own, you saw it on the PowerPoint, it was part of the discussion, whatever you hear. And by the way, you might be doing it anyway, and you just want to be more mindful and do it more consistently. That's fine too. All right? How will I know that we were successful? If we could detail them. If I could ask you to list them and say, this is what I learned today. This to me was most important. Maybe ranking the strategies. Okay? But it's less, again, about the academic, the knowledge. It's more about the implementation and what feels right for you. Now, some of you might have your students for 1 period a day, maybe even only a couple times a week, if you teach a specialty. And some of you might have them an entire morning or afternoon. Those who have them for longer have a built-in advantage and also a built-in disadvantage, in a way. So knowing who you are, how often you teach, the way in which you engage with these students, all of that should factor in as well. Okay? So with all that said, let's take a moment. Let's actually do a think, pair, share on this. Let's do a quick fist to 5 to analyze your comfort with think, pair, share. Does anyone know what fist to 5 is? Yes? Somebody over here? Zach.
Like,
my former student, by the way. Go ahead. Yes. I take a lot of pride in that. Yes.
Like how well you agree with it. Like a 5 is like, fairly well, or whatever it is, huh? And then like 0.
Yeah. So it's a self-assessment tool. 5 is the maximal score you would give yourself. Fist is the lowest, and then there's a range. So fist, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 is I know it super clearly. I can get up and present it to everybody. 4 is just about a 5, but maybe I'm not 100% confident, and then it proceeds down towards a 0. Can we quickly I know you heard some of the last things. You can give yourself a 5. Anyone else who was here the last session, great. But otherwise, can you kindly self-assess? Think, pair, share. If you could describe it to everybody, get up and all that, give yourself a 5. If you're sort of good-ish, 4 or 3. And then if you really have no idea what it is, a fist, or 1 or 2. Can everybody kindly show me? Just put it up in front of you, like this. Doesn't have to be up here. There should be no talking. If you have a question, I want you to assess your knowledge of think, pair, share. Think, pair, share. 5, 4, all the way down to a fist. Okay? I saw a couple of 5s. Would any of the 5s like to describe it to the group? Do you have a book? Yeah? Go ahead.
So a teacher poses a question, and then first the students think about it themselves, then they pair up and discuss it, and then share with the class and share with the other person.
Yeah, and I learned my lessons in the last session. I can't go too deep into this, but the students that really benefit, at least on the think side, are the introverts and the students who don't often get opportunity to think without having a rapid-fire respond to your questions. We, in general, do a terrible job when it comes to giving certain students space and opportunity to respond compared to their peers. Are you familiar with Madeline Hunter? Have you ever heard of wait time? So how many seconds is the wait time? I suggest. Show me with your fingers, please. I'm not going to tell you how many hands you need. But how many seconds do you need to wait between the end of your question and before you start to field responses from your students? Show me with your fingers, please. Everybody needs to respond. If you don't know, just guess. What's the research-based amount you should wait before you ask for a response? Okay. So a lot of 10s. That's not quite 10. 7 is correct. Okay, there might have been another 7 here somewhere. But 7 is actually the right answer. So imagine 7 seconds. That's an eternity in a classroom, especially with younger students. So it does require discipline from you and from them. But that they need to know that you're not going to answer the question until 7 seconds have elapsed, and then you'll invite them to raise their hand. Has anyone here ever had a student that before you even utter the second word of your question, their hand shot up? This is for them. And it's also for the students that never raise their hand because they feel like they don't have a chance compared to those jackrabbit peers of theirs. Okay? So think, pair, share is very helpful in that regard. I would like for you to do the following. We'll take 60 seconds of silence and think about the qualities of your favorite teachers and the qualities of your least favorite teachers. Names are optional. Just kidding. No naming. Okay? When you're done, and that means 60 seconds of silence, and I will be watching. After those 60 seconds, you'll turn to the person seated next to you. You need to triple up, do so. Please try to make it 2 people wherever possible. Discuss your answers with your peers. And then I'll ask for a few volunteers to share. So every pairing should have 1 potential spokesperson to represent what was discussed in your pairing. Yes, questions?
Yes, so for younger kids, I teach first grade.
Uh-huh.
You're giving us 60 seconds.
Yes.
How long have you given them to, like I put them in thinking positions.
Yes.
And they have to think before they raise their
You're hand. The expert on that answer. So I'm giving you 60 seconds. You have to decide the duration. I think it should be long enough for them to process the question and come up with something meaningful. But if you think discipline or, you know, any other issues have to be considered, then you'll time it accordingly.
You said 7 seconds for them to come.
That's for wait time. That's for like a one-to-many question. Yeah, so right. And so before they shoot, unless it's a choral response. But even with choral response, where I'm inviting everybody, what I typically do is I'll say, okay, who said I wrong something or that I didn't catch the question. Okay, so then you'll give them a few seconds. When I count down, and then I invite them to respond. This creates symmetry. It's not chaotic. They're not jumping the gun. Because a lot of kids know the information, they just don't have the retrieval capacity of some of their peers. And retrieval questions are harder. That's why multiple choice and true and false and fill in the blank, not necessarily, unless it's a word bank. Right? If the information's on the test, those typically are easier questions. If the information's not on the test, like an essay, that's a harder question because I have to have it here and then I have to respond. Does that make sense? Okay. So with that said, let's take 60 seconds, answer the questions, and then let's move into our pairings. At this point, there should be no talking. Again, this is the hardest part for many people. I know. I see all you extroverts out there. We can't be quiet. How can we ask our students to be quiet? Just saying. That is the reason, by the way, we have days like this. To put you through the agony that you do to your students on a daily basis. I know, I can tell. I went to this guy's house and it was like watching the pain field. Okay, 15 seconds. At this point, if you're done, you can sort of, you know, if the kids do, I'll work with you, you work with me, and then you can find your partner. Okay, at this point, please share. I'm giving you 90 seconds to discuss. Teacher, what did that person do that made that person so memorable? Let's number off here. One, two, yes? You have your hand back here. Three. And then was your hand up? Four. For now. Okay, number one.
That was me?
Yes.
So we agree the same thing. The teacher has passion about what they're teaching.
Uh-huh.
And that the teacher cares about the students. That's the same thing.
Passionate and caring. Yeah. I should write those down, but I'm being lazy. Okay, yes.
Was it me?
I think you were two.
Okay,
yeah.
So I had a teacher in high school that set us up for success in his test. He used to give us, like, a pre-test. And I always felt that it set us up to all, like, do well on the test.
Okay, so he was, like, success-oriented?
Yeah, success-oriented.
Or something along those lines. What was the second one? Passionate and?
Caring.
That's what I thought. Okay, number three?
Passionate about the material.
Number three, I'm sorry?
That it was passionate about
the material, yes. Okay, number three?
It was fourth grade teacher. I think she made it, first of all, very relatable to the students. But, you know, she taught in class, but she knew I loved reading. She also was in charge of libraries. And she'd say, I just got a whole bunch of new books. You want to come check them out first? You can come in. You want to tell me about it. What do you like? What do you like? Just finding common ground and common interests.
Okay, it sounded almost like curious as well. Relatable and curious. By the way, if I misspell something, any of the English teachers in the room are welcome to clarify. Okay, number four.
I had a teacher who handed out index cards every week and she asked us what was on our mind and then she wrote back to us.
Okay. So it sounds like a curiosity of sorts, but creating a space for you to share those kinds of things. Probably in a way that you felt comfortable doing so, I would imagine. Anyone else? Yes?
I would say autonomy, like where they really empowered us on our own.
Okay.
And also when it felt very relevant to our lives.
Okay, good. So we'll see if there's a common theme here in a moment. How about on the negative side? Let's use, I don't have any red here, so let's use a different color. I guess just black for now. Anything on the negative side, a teacher that made them least favorite of yours? My social studies teacher in seventh grade wore black on test days. Just saying. Okay, raise your hand if you'd like to share something. One, two, three. Anyone else? Four? Come on, that can't be just five. Okay, fine. Number one, what do you have?
Teachers that don't follow through.
Oh, don't follow through with promises?
Yeah.
That's it? Okay.
I'll give you an extension.
So didn't follow through. My handwriting becomes progressive. It's never good, but it's progressively messier as I move lower on the board. Number two.
Is that me?
Yeah, maybe.
Expecting results, not guiding towards results.
Okay, so sort of like a hands-off, just it's on you?
A high expectation.
Or unrealistic.
Okay, so unrealistic expectations.
Not unrealistic.
Unsupported. Supported expectations. Number three. I think it was the gentleman behind you.
Yes, so it's kind of like the opposite of passion. We had a teacher who always was running away from the class. Every excuse, I think you guys need a break, and he was running out. And we're all sitting there like,
that's so interesting, because I was about to do that. And I thought you'd all pick up on that, but I guess it's kind of like, okay.
He didn't want to be there.
It was okay. So let's just call it disinterested, although it sounds worse than that. Okay. Wow. You know, they usually say that people that go into education do so for two reasons. Either there's a great teacher they wanted to emulate, or they had a terrible teacher that they wanted to fix the system. Number four. Who's number four?
I'm number four.
Yes.
So we had two different answers. One was the topic was completely uninteresting to one of us.
Okay.
And the other one was a teacher who just...
For me, that was trigonometry. But go ahead. I'm sorry. When they ask, you know, the security questions they ask, and it says, what was your least favorite subject? I'm sorry. But that's just me. Everyone else loves trigonometry. Yes.
So, and another one was a teacher who just went on and on and on without, like, checking in, and everybody was...
Boring, droning.
...on their lesson, or, you know, that kind of stuff.
Okay, thank you very much for sharing. And number five.
When tests were unfair, like trick questions.
Unfair. Ooh.
That's a good one.
Yeah. By the way, the way I learned how to make sure...
Unfair.
First of all, just a couple of sort of lift the curtain, if you will, on teaching techniques and things like that. The strategy of numbering off, any benefits? What we just did, 1 through 5, let's say, yes?
I'm ready. Also, if someone isn't more willing to share, but they know that they can't, so they have time to think and make it off the
chance. Gives them time to decide if they want to respond. What else?
Realistic expectation of this is how many will share and not what we're going to get to.
Okay, sets a limit. What else?
You know that you're not forgotten. If preschool, I'll be saying, "Mora, my hand's right here."
Right. They keep ooing at you. Ah, right. And you're constantly dealing with all of that. So this way you handle that up front. Yeah? Okay? There was something else I wanted to say. I don't remember at the moment. Okay, so these are really good starting points to helping us understand